ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 24th of March. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. US President Donald Trump has backed down on his threat to bomb Iran's power plants if it didn't open the Strait of Hormuz, pushing back his deadline for another 5 days. The president says it's because there have been productive talks with Tehran, and even suggesting Iran wants to make a deal to end the war. But the Speaker of Iran's parliament has contradicted the US president, saying there have been no negotiations. Correspondent Catherine Diss reports from Jerusalem.
Iranian rescue crews scour the rubble for survivors in another apartment building destroyed by an Israeli strike. He's alive in there. Why are you acting so late? One woman says. I am pleading with you all. I am telling you, he's in there. This is the human toll of the US-Israel war on Iran, now in its fourth week, and fears of further escalation were raised at the weekend when US President Donald Trump threatened to bomb Iran's power plants if the Strait of Hormuz wasn't opened within 48 hours.
Good morning, Mr. President.
But as that deadline loomed and US markets opened, President Trump backed down, saying he would extend his ultimatum for 5 days after productive and constructive talks with Tehran.
We have had very, very strong talks. We'll see where they lead. We have major points of agreement. I would say almost all points of agreement. Perhaps that hasn't been conveyed. The communication, as you know, has been blown to pieces.
But talk of a deal or talks at all were quickly smacked down by Tehran. The Speaker of Iran's parliament saying the US had requested a meeting for the coming weekend, but that he hadn't responded. In a post on X, he said no negotiations with America had taken place, that this was fake news intended to manipulate financial and oil markets and to escape the quagmire in which America and Israel are trapped. With both sides contradicting each other, it's difficult to know how or even if background negotiations are progressing. But President Trump's flip-flopping has done nothing to quell the worries of Iranians on the ground. This man, who can't be identified for his own safety, told the ABC from inside Iran he fears what the president might do next.
People in major cities are so scared, knowing that such an attack on infrastructures will make their already difficult lives even more miserable. Having no electricity, no water in the taps, no gas in the gas stations will be intolerable. And people are already thinking, what will the point of Trump be by doing so?
This is Catherine Diss in Jerusalem, reporting for AM.
The federal government says it will change workplace laws to cut down contract negotiation times between trucking companies and major retailers as fuel prices soar. The transport sector is warning its industry and the economy is at risk of collapse without immediate action. Political reporter Sarah Tomevska has more.
Keeping truckies trucking on is critical to Australia's economy as the Transport Workers Union welcomes moves to amend the Fair Work Act. National Secretary Michael Caine says major retailers like Coles and Woolies should pay for the higher cost of fuel.
We want those companies who are reaping in the millions and the billions to funnel some of it back in to transport operators to make sure they're getting funded for these fuel spikes.
Contract renegotiations between transport companies and retailers can take 6 months. But Workplace Relations Minister Amanda Rishworth says that's too slow in the current circumstances.
What our legislative change will do will allow in certain circumstances that there will be able to be shortened timeframes now for the Fair Work Commission to make these determinations and orders.
Is there a danger that some truck companies are going to go bust before these new measures can take effect?
Well, we're acting very swiftly.
But it's unlikely the laws will be introduced to Parliament this week. In the meantime, the price of diesel is tipping $3 a litre. National Farmers Federation President Hamish McIntyre says its consumers will pay twice at the bowser and the checkout.
We estimate in a matter of weeks we'll start to see the costs flow through to the consumers at the supermarket shelves, particularly short shelf life produce, so it starts with dairy, but then our fruit and veg.
Christian Downey is a professor in the School of Regulation and Global Governance at ANU.
The bigger picture here is that Australia's had a fuel security problem for decades. But I think the most important thing and the thing that the government should really be focusing on going forward is that we need to electrify our transport sector.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese presented the current crisis in the Middle East as a case for decarbonisation while addressing a minerals industry dinner last night.
All of this underlines a very simple reality. The stable, predictable world of ever-expanding free trade is gone, and it will not be returning anytime soon.
A sober message as the government grapples with how to secure supply chains, with no signs of war abating.
Sarah Temevska reporting. And fuel costs could cause a health crisis for rural and remote patients struggling to afford to travel to critical medical appointments. Doctors and patient advocates say some people are cutting back on food and other essentials to afford medical travel or delaying important appointments. Here's National Health Equity reporter Caitlin Gribben.
Marianne Watson's son, Ryan, knows how to keep long family car trips lively.
Ryan loves tunnels. So every time a tunnel comes up, he makes sure everyone's aware of it. So you've got to put your hand on your head and duck. I mean, I don't duck too much because I've got to keep an eye on the road. But yeah, everyone's got to do the duck.
Ryan and his mum spend a lot of time on the Bruce Highway. They regularly travel from the central Queensland town of Billawheeler to Brisbane, 550 kilometres away, for specialist medical care.
Ryan is 16. He's diagnosed with severe intellectual impairment, which includes he can't tell us his feelings and that. So he's also got uncontrolled epilepsy, and then he's got a brain tumour which is stable.
Marianne Watson says Ryan will soon have surgery to reduce the seizures. She says she was looking forward to her son's life-changing procedure, but is now worried about the cost of fuel to get there.
Really tighten our budget around other things, and the kids are probably sick of me saying, you know, we're not wasting food, we need to eat it because I can't afford it.
Ms. Watson expects it will cost hundreds of dollars more in fuel to get to and from Brisbane for the operation and follow-up appointments. It's a common story, according to the Rural Doctors Association of Australia. President Sarah Chalmers says unleaded fuel is now well over $3 a litre in some areas.
Probably fair to say more remote communities across North Australia would have fuel prices that high, and probably even higher in really isolated parts.
Dr. Chalmers says the consequences for rural patients could be devastating.
There are circumstances where people feeling the need to delay treatment could be a life and death situation for them. We are definitely in a situation where people may be making decisions that they think is about saving money, but actually may cost them more in the long run, including potentially their life.
Rural patient advocate Justine Christensen says she's been contacted by people stressed about their budgets.
Unfortunately, people are left to face crunching numbers, and that's really sad because they have to choose what has to be sacrificed. And sadly, it's easier to sacrifice the travel for healthcare rather than cutting out their groceries or not paying their rent for the week.
Advocates are pushing for an increase to the travel subsidies for rural and remote patients who have to travel to bigger cities for care. Queensland mum Marianne Watson says that would relieve some of the pressure.
Every time you spend, you know, you go to spend money, you're like, oh, do I really need this or not? Yeah, all about budgeting for this fuel, and you just got to do what you got to do. That's life.
Queensland mum Marianne Watson ending Caitlin Gribben's report. There's significant uncertainty about how long the war in the Middle East might last and how long it will take for fuel supplies to return to normal. It's making it hard for businesses to plan for the future and for households to manage rising prices. Sally McManus is the Secretary of the Australian Council of Trade Unions. She joined me earlier. Sally McManus, thanks for speaking with AM this morning.
No problem.
You've worked closely with employers during the COVID difficulties. From the outside, it seemed to be a pretty cooperative approach from businesses and unions. Are you expecting the same level of cooperation during this oil shock?
Well, first of all, we hope that the oil shock isn't as bad as COVID, because COVID was pretty bad, let's face it, and that we will be having briefings, I know, with the government very soon around supply chain issues. And of course, we will be talking to employers as well, because if in the end Australia is badly impacted, there will need to be an ability for us to work together.
Do you think the federal and state governments should be taking a more precautionary approach? Should they be starting things like some level of fuel rationing or pressing harder for work from home, for example, or are they right to wait?
Well, I think they are sending all of those messages at the moment. Clearly on the issue of working from home, this isn't just about saving fuel. It's about cost of living. You know, everyone knows who's filling up their cars with petrol, like how much extra it's costing people. So anyone who can work from home, we'd ask all employers to allow that if there's no public transport, especially if you're in a regional area.
The ACTU is seeking a 5% pay rise for workers on the minimum wage ahead of the Fair Work Commission making its determination annually. What difference would 5% increase to the minimum wage make for workers?
Well, we're talking about the lowest paid 23% of Australian workers, and they're the ones who have and continue to suffer the most with cost of living pressures. They're more likely to be renters. They obviously have no choice other than to, you know, have the rent increases, and also in supermarkets, the increases there too. And obviously with fuel, they've got nowhere to go whatsoever. They still haven't caught up to where their wage was in real terms since 2021. They're 4% behind that. We've been clawing that back every single year, and we need to keep going forward there to restore people's wages.
5% is really the upper range of expected inflation if the war in the Middle East drags on, which it may not do. Is there any risk that a wage increase of that level would add to inflationary pressures?
Well, it's a really important fact to know here. Even though it's 23% of the workforce, it's only 0.6% of the whole national wages bill. And that's because, you know, there's a lot of part-time and casual workers and they're low paid. So if you think about it, less than 1% of the overall wages bill, an increase of 5% there's no way mathematically that can have any impact on inflation. And we know anyway from the evidence every single year when minimum wages go up, it has no impact on inflation. So anyone saying otherwise really needs to be scrutinised.
There's going to be around 30,000 teachers today going on strike in Victoria. They're pushing for a 35% pay rise over 4 years. The key issue there is the difference between their pay and what teachers in other states get. Can you explain what the rationale is for Victorian teachers seeking such a large increase in their pay?
Well, first of all, I'd say I'm going to predict that this strike is going to be huge today, huge. There's a real depth of anger amongst Victorian teachers. And it's because they, during the COVID time, said, OK, we're all in this together at that particular time. And they accepted a small, very small, like 2% increase at that time. And of course, inflation took off. They're now the lowest paid teachers in the country, which is just crazy. You know, Victoria's meant to be an education state. And so they are like finding themselves in the same position as a lot of low paid workers and really struggling with cost of living. And so that's why they're wanting that pay increase. They're simply wanting to be on par with their colleagues in other states. Other state governments value their teachers. Victorian government should as well.
Sally McManus, thanks very much for speaking with me this morning.
No worries. Thank you.
And Sally McManus is the Secretary of the ACTU. Australia and the European Union look set to sign a long-awaited trade deal, as well as a new security partnership, as both sides grapple with global uncertainty and an increasingly unpredictable White House. Here's Foreign Affairs reporter Stephen Jedgetts.
Ursula von der Leyen might be a long way from home, but she received a welcome to country full of warmth at Admiralty House, overlooking Sydney Harbour. Today, the EU chief will also address federal parliament. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, telling Question Time, she'll be the first woman among the 20 world leaders who have, so far, been granted that honour.
This is a milestone moment for the relationship between Australia and the European Union, such an important relationship.
But the real meat will be found in the deals, which both sides expect the leaders to strike later today. At the top of the list, a free trade agreement, which has eluded the EU and Australia, despite years of protracted negotiations. The Prime Minister signalling his intent on signing the pact.
To give Australian farmers and growers and exporters better access to a market of 450 million consumers.
Under the deal, trade barriers on countless goods will be dropped, lowering the price of European products here. Australian farmers will also gain more access to EU markets, although exactly how much isn't yet clear. Europe's agriculture sector is highly protected, and competition from overseas producers is politically contentious on the continent. The president of the National Farmers Federation, Hamish McIntyre, says unless the EU radically increases its most recent offer of tariff-free access for beef and sheep meat exports, Australia should say no.
We need to remember this is a generational deal too. It's not a short-term thing. This will be for our children in 20 to 30 to 40 years' time. So there's no hurry. We need to get this right. We're better off to have no deal than a bad deal.
The two leaders are also expected to sign a new defence and security partnership. It's not a formal alliance, but will bolster military links.
In a more volatile world, closer partnerships with trusted friends are more important than they've ever been.
Even friends on the other side of the world.
Stephen Jedgett's there. Greece is one of the world's most popular tourist destinations. More than 30 million visitors travel there every year. But the country's own population is in free fall, with some predictions showing it could drop by as much as 20% by 2050. Foreign correspondent reporter Rhiannon Shine Papantonio has this story.
I'm hiking through the forests of Arcadia in Greece's mountainous Peloponnese region with tour guide Lambros Papalambros.
Let's say that I know every stone in this area, so even if you drop me with a helicopter everywhere here, I know where I am directly.
We arrive at our destination, a little village called Luster. Once home to around 300 residents, these days it's a ghost town.
This village, from years now, they don't have civilians, just empty houses.
Lambros tells me this village used to be full of life.
There was farmers, a lot of children, and the school in the back of the church was open, of course.
Today there are ghost towns scattered right across Greece, and they could be a window into the country's future. Like many developed countries, Greece's birth rate has been falling for years and now sits well below replacement level. By some projections, the population could drop by as much as 20% by 2050.
The consequences are difficult and troubling.
That's Domna Mihalidou, Greece's families minister. One of her first acts in government was helping to roll out a baby bonus to try to lift the birth rate.
We currently give for the first kid 2,400 euros so that a family can have some help from the government for the first high expenses of birth. And we give indirect financial incentives with regards to tax deductions and lowering of tax rates.
Domna Mihalidou is also an economist and says there's no guarantees.
If people responded directly to financial incentives with regards to the demographic issue, it would have been simpler for all of us.
Greece's declining birth rate isn't the only challenge. The country is still trying to lure back many young Greeks who left during the debt crisis just over a decade ago, when youth unemployment reached nearly 60%.
So it was honestly a traumatising experience.
Clary Sahar is among the roughly half a million Greeks who left at the height of the crisis.
What we were promised as a generation is that if you are a good student, if you study hard, if you go to university, you're going to have a chance for a good life. And this is not really the case.
she's now returned to Athens and says while the economy has bounced back, the years of economic troubles left a deep scar.
With what we went through during our 20s, we really want to make sure we have a very stable life situation before starting a family.
Athens resident Clary Sahar, Rhiannon Shine Papantonio reporting. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. When South Australians went to the polls on the weekend, one in five voters ticked One Nation first. Today, host of the ABC's AM program, Mel Clark, on how the party is managing to capture voters and how it will translate federally. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.